Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Royal Watcher podcast, where Sam and I are going to be taking you over the Royal highlights of 2023, which has been quite an eventful year for us.
Yeah, actually really eventful. Looking at these pictures, I can't believe this has all been happened in one year.
I know, we've had a coronation, a jubilee, a couple of funerals, so many royal weddings, and a bunch of birthdays.
Yeah.
It's been quite eventful, and I think it's really after COVID and all of that, the years since then have been pretty busy, but this has been, I think, the busiest of them all, and I think this is a lot to discuss.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, so I think let's start off on the next slide by looking at the funeral of King Constantine II of Greece, which was the biggest royal gathering that began the year. And it was, I think, one of those events where King Constantine was such a beloved figure in the royal community. And so all of Europe, except the British, main British royal family, did all gather in Athens for a funeral, which in some ways was very kind of fitting this monarch. But the petty kind of humiliation that the Greek government did over the stages, I think that did kind of sour things a bit.
Yeah, it's a complicated topic. I think we eventually will have to do a separate video on the Greek monarchy.
I mean, it's been a year and we've been trying to do it, but get some input on.
Yeah, but it's just, yeah, it's such a, again, it's a very contentious history. Greece in and of itself in the last 100 years is just, yeah, I mean, if you, I wouldn't even say light reading, but if you want to get into it, yeah, it's very complicated, very difficult. But yeah, this funeral was very very sad, very moving, very poignant, because it was a pretty much sort of, I mean, as much as this is my personal opinion here, Crown Prince Pavlos will never be crowned king, so it will, in my personal opinion, so this is kind of the end of an era for the monarchy in Greece, even though there hasn't been a monarchy there for, if I'm making any sense in my rambling here, do you know what I mean? It's like,
for over 50 years there's been no monarchy, but I think him still being king and being the last monarch, it's now the end of an era, and it's basically the final chapter to this 160-year history the Greek royal family had.
Yeah, so I think, you know, it's now going to be more of a like a German style situation where they're probably just going to be treated as very, very high, but kind of just an aristocracy.
Definitely, yeah. No, it's very interesting. I know some in the royal watching community have a big issue with the Greek royal family even using their titles at all, which I kind of find a bit unfair, because you see the Bourbon Parmas and the two Sicilies using titles, and their monarchies have been abolished for over a century, and I think the 1850s. So, and there's no issue with the Greek royal family, I think, because there's so much in the media, and it's such a contentious issue, mainly, I think, because of the Greek government's treatment of the royal family. That is why it continues to be just a topic of debate.
Yeah, but like we say, it's very, we'd have to do a whole video on it.
Yeah, definitely. No, but it was a big royal gathering. We saw the Danish royal family, the Swedish, the Luxembourg, Monaco, Dutch, Belgian, Spanish, the Russians, the Norwegians, the Jordanians, the Serbians, the Romanians. So it was a huge gathering of European and foreign royalty.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And unfortunately, you know, we did say maybe a few weeks afterwards, there was a bit of an outcry that, you know, Princess Anne went, even though, you know, she, you know, is a relation of King Constantine, is a senior member of the British royal family. But it just seemed to us that, you know, everyone else sent their senior members.
Yeah,
and we sent Princess
especially
Anne.
Especially because King Charles and Prince William were pretty close to King Constantine. And we saw that relationship was quite prominent in a few slides, because Queen Anne Marie, the Crown Prince Pavlos, and Marie Chantal were very prominent during the coronation festivities. So the fact that King Charles and Prince William were not at the funeral to honor their godfather and friend was quite a bit of a disappointment, but given kind of how the Greek government refused to give him a state funeral and kind of the somewhat diplomatic implications of King Charles not having yet made a foreign visit, it was kind of, it prevented them from being present from that point of view, which I think is a bit of an overreaching thing, but that's the excuse they're going with.
Yeah, it's an explanation. It's not an excuse.
Yeah. But no, definitely, I think it was a sad beginning to the year, but it, also the way that the all these royal figures gather around the Greek royal family to support them at this time, I think that was very kind of important and nice to see that there was a big occasion in the Metropolitan Cathedral in Athens, which even a decade ago would have been unthinkable.
Yeah. So I think, you know, like I said, it's the end of an era in that it's probably not going to be as contentious for these events to happen in Greece now, that because King Constantine never abdicated, he never gave up his title as king, even though Greece was declared a republic. But now that Crown Prince Pavlos has decided to remain Crown Prince, I think they might actually stand more of a chance.
Yeah, and I think we've seen evidence of that in recent months with kind of the new treasures that have been found at Tatoi Palace and the way that the royal family has been kind of working with the government in a sense to kind of facilitate this transition that has been going on for so long. But King Constantine was really a figure preventing that because he always believed in the return of the monarchy.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see how that pans out.
And then we can move on to the next royal gathering, which was on the evening before the coronation of King Charles, when the royalty from around the world gathered in London for a spectacular reception at Buckingham Palace. And then the both of us had the opportunity to see a lot of the royals in person as they went to dinner.
Yeah, again, I can't believe it happened this year. But yeah, that was an amazing evening. That was just nonstop. Oh my God. Oh my God. That's that one. Oh yeah.
Exactly. So, it was, I think, unforgettable. And there's still times when I'm like, I cannot believe we were there and saw it all, like, and we got such like an intimate view of everything. Like, it's one thing being in the crowd underneath the balcony, but this was just next level.
Yeah. And I think, as I said in our video on the coronation, the guys at the restaurant, the Oswald's, the security guys, they were lovely fellas. They could see we were being respectful. Like, we were close, but we were at a respectful distance and we weren't screaming and shouting. So they were really like, they were quite happy to let us carry on. So it was amazing how close we got.
Definitely. Yeah, no, it was unreal. And then also at the same time, one thing I'd like to point out on the top right, you can see in the back Crown Princess Marie Chantal talking to King Felipe and Queen Letizia, which, if for those royal watchers in the know, would have been almost impossible even last year. But to see them so close, and especially I think they're being seen together in Athens for King Constantine's funeral and then together for this means that they're on good terms again.
Yes, that was quite titillating for us all to watch. Go, oh, forgiving each other, have you? Okay.
Yeah. I think it's gone on long enough. And it's one of those things, like, they are family and fights do happen in families and then they do move on.
They do, yeah.
It gives a lot of us hope for those who have issues in their own families. Maybe things will get better one day.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was, and that reception, it was lovely. It was the biggest royal gathering. Thing I am very disappointed about is that there was no big group photo from the coronation. Like, yeah, the least they could have done. Because if you move on to the next slide, you'll see that there's only one shot we have of King Charles and all the foreign royals, and that's it.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I wonder why. Did the Queen have a group photo? Or did she?
Yeah, she did. Yeah, that major one in Buckingham Palace of everyone in tiaras.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so this was very odd. And I mean, the Brits have been kind of moving away from group pictures. The last one I can remember was for the Queen's Diamond Jubilee lunch at Windsor. And there was that famous photograph of all the reigning and former sovereigns.
Yeah.
This one, I mean, I feel like it would have been such a great way to kind of acknowledge all the people that had traveled to the UK for this event. Because I get why they couldn't take a group photograph at the Queen's funeral, because that would have been a bit disrespectful. But this was a jubilant occasion.
Yeah, I mean, as anyone who did listen to our coronation episode, a lot of things could have been done differently for that.
Very much. Yeah, no. One thing I would like to add is in the New Year's honor list, people were making mention of why the Duke of Norfolk was not given an order, or even the Order of the Garter. And I was like, well, if they wanted specifically for organizing the coronation, I was like, if it was up to me, he would have been in the Tower.
Well, there's that. And also, what does he need an honor for? He's the Duke of Norfolk. Is that not enough?
Yeah, like, why does he need the Order of the Garter?
Yeah. So, but
no,
hey.
It's, yeah. It was an interesting, I mean, there's a lot of disappointment still for what the coronation could have been. And I mean, seeing the documentary, it did look very much like, I think one of the themes that we did discuss, it was not properly rehearsed. And seeing that the main rehearsal was like, the first main one was like 9 days before the coronation, and it seemed like the king and queen had no idea what to do at that point. Considering that, they did pretty well, despite all the minor mishaps on the day itself.
Yeah, which is astounding if you consider, you know, if you were waiting for this day for 60, 70 years, it's just like, you didn't think to plan it?
Yeah.
Saying that. Oh, yeah.
I mean, probably different for them. We plan the big occasions in our life long before there's even a possibility of them happening.
Yeah. But yeah, unfortunately, as spectacular as a coronation is, I think a lot of people felt that this coronation of King Charles and Queen Camilla sort of fell a bit flat.
Yeah, there were some interesting things announced obviously recently, especially regarding King Charles's outfit, that maybe he wanted to wear a uniform, and there were some things about how the UK government was trying to deflect attention from their own scandals and wanted to drag the king and queen under the bus by having their criticized and like their the spending criticized for the coronation in the public to kind of distract from the government's own policies. And maybe King Charles made like a very last minute decision to wear this outfit, but it's very cheaply made, that it's like, for a man who's known for his tailoring and his suits and everything, for him to wear something like this on the most important day of his life was very disappointing.
Yeah, so yeah.
Maybe he was making a statement. But yeah, Queen Camilla looked fabulous. The crown looked good. The diamonds were nice. And then I think it's time for us to move on.
Yeah.
And then to something that was actually a very nice surprise was all the tiaras we got at the wedding banquet of the Crown Prince of Jordan, which was a very kind of spectacular occasion. And we had received kind of confirmation from our sources a few days before, but we didn't dare kind of make it public or even believe that it would happen because the Jordanians haven't hosted a tiara event for over 40 years. But this was just amazing.
Yeah, this is how I wish I felt about the coronation. Like, I lost my mind on Instagram when I watched this this reception. It's like, I wish the coronation made me feel this way, because this was amazing. Like, not only was everyone dressed up to the nines, everyone had their tiaras on, we also got like a number of surprise pieces that we haven't seen in years. It was great.
It was amazing. Yeah, I think this is like you're talking about. This is the sort of feeling that we wish we had gotten for the coronation. The group picture and like the amount of tiaras and just the general kind of thing. It's royals being like royals and not trying to behave like they're anything else. Because they're there to provide the spectacle. If they're all going to wear suits and ties, nobody really cares.
Yeah. This was just an amazing, amazing night.
It was. No, I'm definitely, we were very happy with this. And I think credit goes to Queen Rania for organizing a major event like this and bringing all of these roles from around the world together.
Yeah, fantastic. I think possibly my highlight, this was my highlight, which is awful to say in a coronation year, but I much preferred this.
Yes, it was. No, I think the Duke of Norfolk should take notes.
Yeah.
Next time. No, it was definitely, I think the entire day, the way it was kind of planned, live streaming everything, being able to see the intimate moments in addition to kind of all the public moments, because there's a camera on the bride and groom from the moment she kind of got out of the car. And that aspect, I think, made us all feel a part of the celebration in a way I don't think we really did with like the televised coverage of lots of other events, which is very kind of coordinated and choreographed, whereas this felt very intimate and you could see the official moments in addition to the private family moments, and I really enjoyed that part.
Yeah, definitely.
So no, it was just overall a very lovely win. And I think this was, as we move on to the next slide, I can talk about how this was actually just one of a series of royal weddings we had this year, which I'll discuss in a bit. But there were so many kind of white tie and tiara events at royal weddings that I was very pleasantly surprised, which we don't necessarily see in a normal year. But we also had the Jubilee of the King of Sweden, which was one of the other highlights of this year. And it brought together the Scandinavian royalty plus Queen Anne Marie to Stockholm for the 2 days of celebration. The highlight being this big banquet at the Royal Palace, where we got this group photograph again of the King and Queen of Sweden with the Danish Queen and Crown Prince and Princess, and the Norwegian King and Queen and Crown Prince, and then the Finnish and Icelandic presidents and first ladies. So it was a very kind of, I think they kept it intimate on purpose, but also a very glittering occasion. And then the three queens brought their biggest tiaras, which was very nice to see.
Yeah, which is wonderful. As you can see from the picture, we've got the Braganza, Sylvia doesn't take that one outside of Sweden, does she?
She's only taken it out once to Denmark, but otherwise she does not.
Yeah, so that's like the biggest one. The Emerald.
If we ever see a state visit to the UK, I think she might take it there too.
Okay. Yeah, so that's like the biggest, grandest tiara that the Swedes have. The Queen Sonia wearing the emeralds, that's the biggest one they've got. And the pearls, I would say.
Yeah, that's the biggest one Daisy can take out of the country.
Yeah, so yeah, everyone brought their big guns.
Yeah, so no, it was very nice to see. I think as Jubilees go, King Carl Gustav has been on the throne for 50 years, and he's kind of under the shadow of his cousin Queen Margaret, I feel at times, but they did have a really good show for him.
Yeah.
No, definitely. And we can move on to the next slide, which was, I think, the big royal gathering of the following months was the Prince Christian of Denmark's 18th birthday celebration, which was a very spectacular event. And I think we now say that this was a very fitting end to Queen Margrethe's reign.
Yeah, so this might have been my second favorite event after the Jordanians' wedding, because obviously in this picture we have the future monarchs of much of Europe.
Definitely. And it's really kind of, I included just this picture of the five of them because I felt like that is the very overarching part, that it is looking at the next generation. The previous slide was the older generation of these Scandinavian monarchs and their heirs. But this is the young people that will lead one day. And it's very interesting how this continuity is such a big role in monarchy. And now we're seeing all these kids grow up.
Yeah, someone was even on Twitter the other day going, I can't believe Amalia is a woman. She was a little girl last time I checked.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm around the same age as Elizabeth and Amalia. So I kind of feel the same way. So it's crazy to see, because I consider myself still a child, and then everyone else grown up now. So.
Yeah, but this was a lovely event as well. I managed to get a English translation of Christian's speech, and it was a lot less. I think, weren't we saying in our analysis of the event, it was much less formal, and it was more. It wasn't so much about Christian. He was trying to make it more about being Danish and what it means to be Danish, and make it more of a country event.
Very interesting. Yeah, no, it's actually one of the things that Queen Margrethe had recently addressed in her New Year's speech is that this whole Christian speech, he said things that she wouldn't have been allowed to say at her age because of the kind of deference of those times. And she really liked that he's able to be more open and talk about the societal issues facing kind of young people today, rather than just focus on himself or the constitution and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I think that was a very big point of this whole thing, where he was able to kind of speak not just for himself, but for Danish youth in general.
Yeah, I think that was really nice, because wasn't there a thing where Crown Prince Frederick said he felt that his 18th birthday was incredibly formal and restrictive, and actually he didn't want Christian to go through that.
Yeah. So seeing it in this direction, I think for his 50th birthday documentaries, that's what he talked about. And now seeing kind of Christian being able to do the same kind of formal events that we like, but have his own touch. And then we also saw the, as you can actually move forward to the next slide, there was this like whole pop concert, and they were able to have this really nice mix of the formal and the kind of contemporary touches, which I think really makes the monarchy relevant in this day and age.
Yeah.
So 2 weeks later, we have the 18th birthday of the Princess of Asturias, who's the heir to the Spanish throne. And that was a very different type of celebration. There was no big royal gathering, no gala. And Christian swore an oath and was installed into the Council of State so he can act as regent. But that was a very kind of informal affair. Leonor, on the other hand, swore an oath in front of the Constitution in front of the entire Spanish Parliament. There's a big parade. She received the whole collar of the Order of Charles III. And they had a private gala dinner that evening, but nothing really too public about that. This, they really chose to kind of emphasize the constitutional aspects of her role now rather than kind of have a more celebration thing.
Yeah, that again, it's like when we're talking about the Greeks, it's just like the role of monarchy in Spain is so complicated in the 20th and the 21st century. It's just an absolute tightrope. And I think, you know, they can't be seen to do anything ostentatious. They can't be seen to be too self-indulgent, because then that would remind everyone about King Juan Carlos. And yeah, I think they're probably going to move towards a more like Dutch version of the monarchy, in my opinion.
Though at the same time, the Dutch version is much grander than other places. So
well, I mean, I say the Dutch version, better. But just like minus Queen Maxima. But like, yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Minus more... Queen Maxima. Just, to be fair, if they didn't have Queen Maxima, the Dutch would be pretty boring.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, what's it? I don't know. Maybe more Norwegian, should we say that?
Yeah. Though I think it's interesting how different countries have such like varied levels of involvement in constitutional matters. Whereas like in Spain, they're very heavily involved. King Felipe, after an election, is involved in trying to solve like create coalition governments and solve all these sorts of issues. Whereas in other countries, they don't really have that sort of political role at all. But in Spain, it's very essential because it's such a fractious political environment that at times it feels like they're the only thing holding the country together.
Yeah, but again, they can't be seen to be going full on, you know.
Yeah. Have preference for anything. So it's a very kind of complicated role to have. I don't envy Leonor. It's going to be a very tough life trying to navigate this, and I doubt it's going to get any better anytime soon.
Yeah, but luckily I think she seems to have a good head on her shoulders. I think Queen Letizia is very aware of the perils, so it's not like, you know, I don't think Leonor's ignorant of these issues, but I think she'll be all right.
Yeah, I think that she has a very good support system around her. Felipe turned out very well. He's handling the job very capably, and I think Leonor will do the same.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, so it's nice to see kind of the next generation of monarchy, and like part of that continuity that we were discussing in the last slide, that it's such an integral part of monarchy, and even though Christian's not the heir, or was not at that time, I should say, it's very much kind of a part of this, how the monarchy goes forward. And it's important to signify this is the next generation, have this clear line of succession and have them be a part of it, but at their own pace and not pressure them to kind of become full-time working roles the moment they turn 18.
So at least they're learning from past mistakes.
Yeah, which I think is a nice kind of change, though. I mean, I would like to see them attend galas a bit more.
Yes.
So that's just a personal thing.
Yes.
So I think we can move on to the next slide, which I believe is the royal tiaras of 2023.
Yeah.
We discussed the major occasions, but a couple more that I'd like to say is Queen Camilla has had quite a good tiara year. She had 5 tiara events, technically, including the coronation. And I think my favorite has been the 2 appearances of the Girls of Great Britain and Ireland tiara. What about you, Sam?
Are we just talking about Camilla or in general?
Camilla. for now.
So, Kimila, I say the Burmese ruby was my favorite because I've never liked that tiara. I'm still not a massive fan, but she wears it so well. I mean, I might warm to it.
I Plus, actually grew a bit of an appreciation for it recently. So,
yeah, I'm, the fact that she's paired it so well with the crown rubies and her own rubies, you
this
know,
is like three rubies from three different eras, but they look so good together.
Yeah. So yeah, that I think that was my favorite look.
And I agree with you on that. Yeah, and then we had the Princess of Wales. The Strathmore Rose tiara debut does take the highlight, even though it's not the most impressive tiara. I think if you'd worn it maybe a decade ago when she was still the Duchess of Cambridge and starting off, I might have been more impressed. But now she's Princess of Wales, it does feel a bit tiny and not as significant for her.
Well, I don't know. I think it sends a subtle message that she might be going down the role. What's the she might be a learn how to talk, Sam. Sorry. So I think she might be taking on the characteristics of the Queen Mother as opposed to the Queen. So, you know,
as
just
opposed to the Queen or Princess Diana, which
or
has
Princess
been,
Diana, yeah.
Because every time she wears that tiara, that's a headline on every newspaper. Kate wears Diana's tiara, even though she's
yeah,
more
we know, we know.
Yeah. So another big royal occasion was the wedding ball of Prince Ludwig of Bavaria. And that brought together all the exiled royals from around Germany and other places in Europe, Portugal, and things like that. And I think that was just absolutely spectacular occasions. He's the future head of the Bavarian royal family. And to see them being celebrated that way was just amazing.
Yeah, and a lot of the former, you know, princes and archdukes and all that, they've still got the jewels and they brought them out for that one.
Yeah, and it was, in a sense, much greater than the coronation, even though it was 2 weeks after that.
We're never going to get over the coronation disappointment.
No,
are we?
We will not. Until the next one, until
the next
they
one.
Fix it. Yeah, until King William. Someone said he'll have a football match for his coronation.
Oh, he'll do what Leonor did when she was sworn in. It'll just be like, "Yep, I'm king. Bye."
And then we had Queen Maxima and Queen Matilde. Matilde wore both her tiaras. She wore the Nine Provinces on top of her head, the Wolfers on her neck, and then she wore her laurel wreath tiara as a necklace the next day. But she wore all three of her tiaras during one state visit, while Maxima wore just the Stuart tiara and had a bunch of big diamonds, but she'd barely dipped it to the vault, whereas Matilde had to wear the entire thing and could still barely keep up.
Yeah, you can't touch Queen Maxima when it comes to the bling. Sorry, you can try. Yeah. You can try, and we do enjoy you know, watching you, but no, she knows what she's doing.
Definitely. So both Matilde and Maxima's husband celebrated 10 years on the throne this year, and they both had two official portraits released, and both of them wore these tiaras. That's why I included them in that highlight, because it was a significant year for them.
Hmm.
And Queen Letizia wore La Boina. It was, I think both of us agreed, it was possibly the worst tiara hair we've seen in quite a long time.
Oh, it's just just no, no.
Yeah, no, it did not work. Queen Margrethe wore the pearl pois tiara four times. And given that she's about to give it up, I can't blame her anymore, though I did have some strong words for that prepared. But no, it does suit her. She does look lovely in it.
She does. So maybe we'll remember her. That will be her signature look.
Yes. No, it's lovely. I think, and we can move on to the next slide, which we will talk about all the royal weddings of 2023, which, I mean, we talked about the Jordanians. But they had another wedding this year, which when Princess Iman got married, and that was a pretty big occasion as well, but without the royal guests. And it, I think, was different from a constitutional point of view, but the way it was turned out was very kind of aesthetic and pretty, and I enjoyed that.
It was. Maybe it was more of a soft launch for the main event.
Definitely. And then we saw Princess Alexandra of Luxembourg got married. Again, a very low-key affair. They had a civil wedding in Luxembourg and a religious wedding in France. She wore the Chaumet choker tiara. Nothing too flashy or grand, but very nice. We talked about the Bavarian wedding already, and we did a big episode on the wedding of the Portuguese Infanta, which was another big royal occasion this year.
Yeah, that was a fascinating episode. Our friend David basically took that episode over and was just like, his knowledge is so
Very informative.
amazing. I would, yeah, if you're interested in the Portuguese royal family and all their jewels and all their history and their palaces, watch that one.
And then we had the wedding of Archduke Alexander of Austria that brought together a bunch of royals. There's also a big royal gathering at Altshausen for Duchess Emily of Wittenberg. One of my kind of most popular articles this year was the wedding of Prince Joseph Wenzel of Liechtenstein on the lower left-hand corner, you can see, which did not have a tiara, but people were obsessed with it, apparently, because it had a lot of attention. So yeah, it was because he married a countess. They're also the Jordanian wedding of like 2 weeks before their own.
Yeah. Oh,
So,
well, that's the
and
joys. That's the joys of blogging, isn't it? You never know what's going to be a hit.
yeah, and interesting enough, I have a feeling that we'll see them and the Jordanians at the Brunei royal wedding in January. So,
Oh, cool.
as they all went to Sandhurst together.
Ah, that'll be it.
That's what. And then there was another big royal getting wedding for the wedding of the Prince of at Wertheim. I'm not going to pronounce this a triple barrel name. I'll butcher it. Sorry about that. And so they had a nice big occasion. And then there's a big white tie ball of which you only got a bit of a glimpse, but his mother wore a massive emerald tiara. So you can check out the pictures of that. But no, it was overall a great year for royal weddings, I think.
Yeah, very much so.
Definitely. And I think then we can move on to the next slide, which is talking about the state visits. King Charles and Camilla went on three state visits, hosted one. Queen Margrethe hosted one state visit and one official visit. The Dutch went on, I think, three state visits and hosted two. The Swedish king and queen went on one state visit to Estonia, but they had two tiara events. So it's been quite a nice year for state visits as well.
Yep, which is what we like because then we all know we're going to get a tiara.
Yes, we do. And then in the case of Sylvia, I mean, she surprised us two tiaras in one visit, which is almost unprecedented.
Yeah, especially since she's about 80 now, isn't she?
Yeah, and she had a kind of a run in I think 2019 when the Swedes and the Dutch both went to India and Ireland on state visits within like weeks of each other. And Maxima, Sylvia went first. She didn't wear a tiara for either of the banquets, but Maxima did. So it was a very, I was like, maybe Sylvia's kind of losing her touch, but she brought it back.
There we go. Never underestimate Sylvia.
Yeah, she's just celebrated her 80th birthday, and good for her.
Yeah.
Long may she continue to wear the tiaras. And I think the next slide should be the last one. And we can kind of talk about, Sam, what was your overall, in addition to the kind of Jordanian wedding, what do you think was your overarching impression of this year? What will you remember when you think of 2023?
Well, I think we've left out the most important event that me and you went to, sad.
Yes.
Was when we met the Queen of
This is
Malaysia.
just the main ones. Yeah.
Yeah,
That
sorry.
is a whole separate episode, which you all have to go watch.
Yes, all go and watch that. But I think apart from that highlight, which was also my birthday,
That.
thank you very much.
Yeah.
No, I think my obviously my favorite was the Jordanian wedding. And also the just not a favorite, but just an important occasion was King Constantine's funeral, just because I felt like it closed a chapter of history that I find very interesting and does actually, you know, have implications on the rest of the European royals. Yeah, that was definitely an interesting event.
Yeah, I think I do tend to agree with you that King Constantine's funeral was such an interesting event. My kind of favorite, in addition to the Jordanian wedding, I think was that reception at Buckingham Palace, because it's one of those occasions where we got to see, rather than I didn't like that we didn't get a group picture, but seeing them interact with each other, we got all those pics of Amalia and Elizabeth gasping over Charles, and this like them interacting in a more intimate level. Basically amongst equals and getting kind of glimpse inside that, which even though the coronation wasn't that big of an event, but I liked having this look into royal life.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, and then we got to see them go into Oswald afterwards.
Yes, we did, and that will also be one of my highlights of the year, in addition to the Queen of Malaysia, because I mean that is number one on there.
Yeah, and that'd probably be number one for many years to come, unless someone wants to top it.
Yes. any of the royals listening, you're open to try.
Yeah, we know how to behave ourselves.
Yes. Thank you, Sam. I think it's been a great year. I've really enjoyed talking to you on the Royal Watcher. And I think we've covered so many events and had many interesting guests. So we really look forward to doing the same in 2024.
Yeah, definitely. Let's hope it's as interesting as this year.
Yes, it is. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.